to another episode of the Split Screen Podcast with Shah Shahid. I am, of course, your host, Shah Shahid. And this is a podcast where we usually compare film remakes with their source material to discover the similarities, expose the differences, and provide a little bit of insight to put it all into context. Today, this episode, we're going to be discussing two movies, one very critically acclaimed. The original movie that we're discussing today is Chinatown from 1974, starring Jack Nicholson and Faye Dunaway, directed by Roman Polanski and written by Robert Town. This movie actually was so good and so critically acclaimed and commercially acclaimed that at the 47th Academy Awards, it was actually nominated for 11 awards. Robert Town won for Best Original Screenplay. It's considered one of the greatest films of all time. But more importantly, the screenplay is considered to be the sort of epitome of how screenplays should be written. This screenplay is essentially referred to by many in the industry who teach the craft, who study the craft, as the thing to study to know how to write a good screenplay. Right now on Rotten Tomatoes, it's got a 98% rating, and it was essentially a box office hit at the time it was released. We're going to be comparing Chinatown to its Bollywood remake. Yes, apparently there is one. I didn't even know. The Bollywood remake is Manorama 6 Feet Under. It came out in 2007, starring Abhay Deol, Gul Panag, and Raima Sen. The director was Navdeep Singh, who later on went on to direct movies like NH10. And the writer is Devika Bhagat, who's also been responsible for screenplays of movies such as Jab Tak Hai Jaan, Aisha, Ladies vs. Ricky Bell. Unfortunately, Manorama 6 Feet Under got no sort of recognition or acclaim whatsoever. No nominations, no awards. The critical reception was like, oh, this is a good attempt. But it's really interesting compared to these two movies, as you'll find out later on. But the best part about this episode is that I'm joined today by long-awaited guest, one half of the best Bollywood podcasts out there. I'm including this one. Matt Bose from Bollywood is for Lovers. Hey, Matt.
Hey, Shah.
How's it going?
Good. I don't know about best Bollywood podcast. I mean, it's many of our listeners would say that the most inaccurate when it comes to pronouncing names podcast. If there was an award for doing that, I guess we'd be the best.
Yeah, but okay, to be fair, I do this a lot. Like I'm very multilingual, and I kind of look at the Hindi language, and it's very weird because I'm trying to think of other languages that aren't in like that, you know, aren't Latin, aren't English, like Spanish. They don't have English letters, but you're trying to read and enunciate words in a language written out in the English language where it doesn't translate properly. The pronunciation, the lettering, the you know, phonetics don't translate properly. So it's ridiculously hard. So lay off, people.
And that's not even getting into getting Tamil names wrong, Telugu names wrong.
Oh, I don't even try those.
Oh, there's so many vowels. It's astounding.
And same thing with Tamil too, right? It's a language in a totally different script and totally different sort of origins, and we're trying to pronounce it using English letters, and it's kind of like something gets lost, right? I mean, Hindi, for example, sometimes the D is an R. Yeah. What? So it's kind of like, what are you talking about? Especially when most Ds are soft Ds and not hard Ds. So, yeah.
And with a th sound, too.
Right, right. I don't blame anyone for mispronouncing any. I mean, especially if you know the word, what it is supposed to be in Hindi, and then you read it in English, you can kind of go, oh, I know what this word is. But if you're going off the English spelling, it's really hard to know what this is supposed to sound like.
I think my favorite Indian language to hear spoken is Malayalam.
Oh, okay.
There's kind of a sing-songy way of speaking that I just really like it, like in Angamali Diaries. It just is pleasant to hear.
See, I'm
a kind of Italian is to me.
I'm very partial to Punjabi.
Mm-hmm.
Has nothing to do with the fact that I married into the Punjabi culture. even before that, I just like that it conveys a tone of like years of old friendship, even mm-hmm. though you're speaking to someone you just met. Like there's a closeness to that language where it's like these two people are best friends, right? And it's like no, they just met. And it's like, you could never tell because of how they're speaking to one another. So I really enjoy that about Punjabi.
Even the way bye is used in Hindi, like it could be your best friend, it could be your brother, or it could just be some guy you met. But there's so much intonation that you get from the word.
That's so true. Yeah.
Or it could be Salman Khan.
Yeah, I do like that in sort of the entertainment industry connotation, you say bye, everyone knows who exactly who you're talking about. Which, yeah, I think, and there is, it's a very, like, I equate it to, like, the bro culture, right? Like, it's a very bro culture thing that, you know, bro, right? It's like, oh, he's we like, know, yeah.
He's like bro number one.
Coincidentally, there hasn't been a movie with bro number one made ever, which is interesting. But yeah, when did this become the Linguist podcast? But that's fine. Matt, so first of all, Matt, I want to apologize to you on the record. We tried to workshop this episode, I think, like a year ago, and then I just never followed back up with you. It took you guys pointing it out in an episode for me to go, oh, yeah. And then, hey, and
least,
again.
At least you're listening.
It is. Well, I mean, when you guys reference the fact that we shaded him, I'm like, which time? Because...
We bring you up
really
often.
Well, that's the thing. That's why I'm like, wait, was there a shade there that I took as a compliment and just ignored and moved on? But yeah, but you're here finally, yeah, and this was your choice of movies.
We've met in person since,
right? Wait, did we come up with the show before we met though?
I think we were talking about it.
Okay,
and we met Toronto last year, and then yeah. But it's happening.
All right. Mia culpa all the way. But you're here now. It's happening. I had no idea that... Okay, first of all, I have to confess. You've obviously seen Chinatown many times.
It's one of my favorite movies. I'd say I've probably seen it 6 or 7 times.
Awesome. So I got to confess, I have studied Chinatown from like a screenwriting perspective. Like I've taken classes where it's been discussed. You know, I've studied it for what it's supposed to be in terms of the screenplay and everything else. So I know the movie inside out in terms of the trivia and the history and everything else. I never actually saw the movie until we were workshopping this episode.
Oh, that's weird.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
I
mean, you're getting half of the experience, right?
Right. And the thing is, and I think, and I had to watch this movie twice, like at one sitting, because I was telegraphing a lot of my reactions. Because I already studied, I know so much about it beforehand, that when it was coming up on screen, I'm like, all right, I got it. Like, I wasn't really watching in the moment, I was kind of just, you know, waiting for the things I already know to happen.
Yeah. Well, it's one of those movies that's so ingrained in popular culture that you kind of already have a sense of what's going to happen before you watch it, even if you're not studying the screenplay. It's like Citizen Kane, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
The jokes from The Simpsons about Citizen Kane, or just like hearing what Rosebud is, you know a bunch of the big parts of it before you approach the film. But when you actually watch it in action, like, damn, yeah, there's a reason why this was so revolutionary.
I really enjoyed Chinatown. I thought, I've watched it multiple times since then. It's one of those movies I just like to have on sometimes, even in the background and stuff, just because there's so much. Like, every sort of dialogue, every sort of scene seems so carefully crafted. But when you saw it, though, Matt, did you have that experience of... Did you study it, or did you know about its sort of reverence before you experienced it, or did you watch it as a movie first?
Well, I watched it when I was in high school, and I think I kind of just knew, like, oh, this is a big, important movie.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew that I liked Jack Nicholson from, like, you know, Batman, that kind of thing.
Right.
So seeing him in his prime, like, yeah, he was a movie star. Nowadays, you know, he doesn't really need to try that hard, but for this movie, he really goes all out.
And did you have that, like, what was your reaction, though, the first time you saw it? Like, were you like, oh, awesome, or were you like, okay, I get it?
I think I was like, whoa, awesome. I mean, I always have liked detective stories, and I think I learned that this one was, yeah, this is the best detective movie of the 70s. So I went in thinking, well, I know a little bit about the older ones and I know the newer ones, but I want to see how this kind of plays with the noir archetypes and becomes a neo-noir.
Were you familiar with noir going into this?
I think in high school, I would have known about it from like Sin City comics or Batman the Animated Series, actually. It's very film noir.
Yeah.
And I was the sort of kid that would be like, well, why does it look like that? What are they trying to do? And I would, like, read books about it because I'm a big nerd. So I had an idea of what a film noir was back then. It won't surprise you to know that I, you know, just watch movies all the time in high school.
No, I wouldn't. I think, wait, isn't that what everyone did? Or
No, I think some popular kids went out to parties and stuff.
I don't know. I've never known those kids.
Yeah, they suck. Who cares
about
them?
Losers.
Do they have a podcast? No, probably not.
All right, so I'm kind of in a similar boat as you. Like I think looking back on sort of the noir genre, I think I've had more experiences naturally with neo noir than, you know, actual authentic noir. And you look at like a movie like this, it's very much like you watch a movie like this and you kind of go, if you didn't see a noir movie, you watch this and you go, oh, I get what all those satires, parodies, references from all this other media is about now. You kind of get the, you know, the gumshoe detective sort of stereotype, and all that starts making sense when you watch a movie like this. And I think that's kind of where I came from, where it was like, this was a very original take on that genre, whereas everything else I'd seen prior to was sort of homages and tributes or satires or parodies of that.
Yeah. Well, so I think the idea of a detective, like wearing a trench coat and a hat. Like, I don't think he wears a trench coat in the film, but he's definitely got the hat. Definitely smoking cigarettes the whole time. But like, you could see that in Calvin and Hobbes when he pretends to be a tracer bullet, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's so pervasive. But when you actually see the real stuff, you're like, damn, yeah, this is why that's so powerful after all these years.
It gives you the, like, my first reaction was like, damn, this guy's got swag, like, you know, like that, like, you know, and that's something that's kind of a term from now, right? But you look at that and you're like, holy crap. But okay, before, so I mean, this is gonna be really fun because again, I really want to pull back the layers of Chinatown and its Bollywood remake, which up until you suggested it, I'm like, I had no idea Man on 6 Feet Under was a Bollywood remake of Chinatown. I'd never heard anything about it. I knew about the movie because I like Abhay Theo. But yeah, so we'll get to that comparison in a few minutes. What I do want to do, Matt, this time with you, obviously you're very well known in our sort of Twitter podcast circle. Your acclaim has reached India even at this point. But what I want to do is I want to sort of kind of look beyond the curtain a little bit, if you wouldn't mind. Obviously, your co-host is Aaron Fraser with Info for Bollywood is for Lovers. You guys do the show together, but you're also in a relationship together.
Yeah, and she's a previous guest of your show, too.
She was. She did the Parinda episode with me, which, again, you guys, I love, I think both of you have done this to me, where both of you have suggested movies that I had no inclination to watch. I knew about it. I had no inclination to watch, and when I watched it, it kind of blew me away. So, kudos
to you. Had you not seen Parinda before?
It was one of those movies that it was the 90s movies, right? So
yeah.
It was probably in my house. It was probably on. My parents probably saw it. I probably saw it with them at one point. But this is when I was super young, and it wasn't like a critical, like, ooh, let's figure out what's happening. It was very much like, it's just on, and I'm just watching images on a screen as I'm playing with my toys or something. I knew about the movie, of course, but I've never actually watched it like that. So it was fun.
Yeah, that was a great movie. I was so happy to watch that one with Aaron getting ready for your show.
And then a year and a half later, here you are.
Broken Horses, maybe not so much.
No, oh my god, that was painful to watch. For more on this episode, check the show notes for the link to that episode. But yeah, so what I wanted to know is, obviously you guys, like, I love how you guys make your show. I love how you guys construct everything. And I have to admit, like, I get a lot of inspiration from how you guys do your show. Like, I listen to your show and I sit down and I'm like, why is my shit not that together? So I get
a
lot of inspiration.
You're just doing a different style of show, though.
Yeah, it's true. But I just mean like the discipline and the ethic that you guys have. I think the work ethic, I think, is really sort of admirable. But I always wonder, okay, because me and my wife, for comparison, when we go grocery shopping, it's really hard to be on the same page. I want this thing. She doesn't want me to get that thing. She's like, that's too expensive, or this is not good for you. And that's a weekly thing. Whereas you and Aaron, you guys put together this awesome podcast. You guys watch the movies together. Obviously, you guys have differences of opinions because that's just a thing that happens. How do you find that working experience in terms of, you know, making a thing with someone that you're in a relationship with?
Well, I think a lot of it would come from the constructed reality of being a podcast. I mean, you can edit it to make it sound, you know, a lot smoother.
Okay.
We don't always agree on everything. And to go to your comparison to the grocery store. I hate the grocery store. It drives me crazy. But Erin actually likes it a lot because she likes cooking and all this stuff. I would prefer never to go in a grocery store my entire life.
Oh, that's exactly how I feel.
So we kind of, I think we do kind of section off parts of our life that one person just enjoys more.
Mm-hmm.
So for instance, with our show, Erin really, really enjoys the process of research.
Right.
She'll dig in, and she's usually the one thinking of the episode ideas.
Mm-hmm. Ah, okay.
Yeah. I've taken the lead on a few of them. Like, I really like the Halloween episodes that we do.
Oh, nice. Yeah, those are awesome.
We're coming up on the fourth one.
Yeah.
I mean, the movies are hit and miss, but the Ramsey Brothers episode one. I read a whole book on the Ramsey Brothers, and I still think they're really, really interesting. But possibly, you know, seeing them in Miss Lovely is the better way to watch most of their films, right? Like, they're pretty rough. I also took the lead on the Bachchan series, which we're hoping to do another one soon, where we're looking at one of his movies for every year that he's been in movies.
Oh, wow. Awesome.
The problem with that one is part of the research for the show is just figuring out, well, where can we actually see this movie?
Right, yeah.
And sometimes, you know, there's movies that we would really like to discuss, but we have no legal recourse to find them.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah, which that's also another good thing that I like about you guys is you guys do push that, okay, legal. Like, it is a challenge, but, you know, let's try to do this the right way and not just do it, you know, through backdoor channels. Because I live in a country, I mean, I come from a country where, and I lived there 3 years, 5 years ago, I was there for 3 years, and they don't have a concept of, like, legitimate DVDs. Like, they don't get legitimate DVDs. Mm-hmm. Nothing from India comes to Bangladesh. The satellite signal is, you know, Indian cable. So when a movie comes out, you can't go to any store, you can't go to any on-demand thing to buy a legal copy of this movie 3 months later. Mm-hmm. So your choices are to basically not watch anything except for what comes on television, or partake in the bootleg. And I mean, and there's stores, there's bootlegs. It's not like you're going to a back alley and like the back of some guy's van. There is a storefront, and we went back this year, and it's still there. And these are legitimate businesses, and the business is of bootleg media.
Yeah.
Because they have no other option. So,
I think part of our insistence on trying to do things legally is it is becoming easier for people in the West to access them, especially mm-hmm. streaming. You know, being able to get digital distribution has really helped out, especially Hindi cinema, but also, Telugu, Malayalam, Tamil. It's a lot easier to get access to them legit. And I think part of our insistence on this probably goes back to when we were big into anime back in high school.
Mm-hmm.
Because we would go to the anime convention, you'd see, oh, here's a DVD box set of all these movies I want to watch.
Yeah.
You buy it, and then the subtitles are shitty.
Yeah.
Right? And it's such a frustrating experience because I can't speak Japanese. I can't speak Hindi either. But, like, I want to watch this movie. I want to know what's happening. But if there's always going to be that disconnect of someone needs to explain this to me in a way I get, either through subtitles or, you know, dubbing in some cases, which I haven't noticed a lot of dubbed into English Indian films. They certainly dub between the different languages in India. But I guess, did dubbing never catch on? What do you think?
I mean, it's never been something that I've even needed to explore because I just kind of
grew up
with the language, again, based on television and movies. But, I mean, I think my most recent experience with dubbing was when I turned on the first episode of Sacred Games and it sounded weird. And I'm like, what the hell is this? And the default audio was set to the dubbed English, which, again, and I caught that and it was very odd to me. I did watch Bahubali dubbed in Hindi.
I watched the second one dubbed in Hindi. It was the only one that we could make it to that day.
Yeah.
And, you know, I can hear the difference between the two languages, but not actually being able to speak them. It's not as, you know, distracting, I think.
Yeah.
Whereas since you can speak one of the languages, you're like, wait a minute,
what the hell is this? Yeah. So in terms of with the show ideas that you were mentioning, do you guys ever, like, what do you find to be the biggest challenge? I mean, outside of defining legal sources to watch, like, what do you find when you've gotten into this Bollywood world and you're watching the Bollywood movies, you're giving your opinions online, besides the mispronunciation thing that you get shit for, and not finding legit copies, what has been the biggest challenge in this process so far?
Well, trying to understand Hindi film humor, I think, is really tough for us.
Mm.
Just because so much of it is based on wordplay, puns, that kind of thing, and then also slapstick. So, you know, slapstick, it has its place. I don't love it, but when you get to the wordplay, the jokes, I mean, we don't get those.
Yeah, it's, I mean, like, there's a movie that it reminds me of one movie. There's a comedy movie called Hera Feri, which is Akshay Kumar, Shalini Shetty, Paresh Rawal. And it's one of those movies that it's very, the comedy is very much based on misunderstanding, based on pronunciation, names,
yeah.
You know, other references. And I've always wondered, because I've talked about this with Kathy, because she's kind of like a on and off again Akshay fan. And that movie was the movie where he kind of made that switch to the kind of comedy and kind of entertaining blockbuster movies that he does now. And it's always hard for me to wonder how someone that doesn't speak the language would get these jokes, because it's hard to translate them, because it is, and they're so quick too, so it's not even like you're getting context as it's happening. It's very much like you know, like Delhi Belly was that kind of a comedy, but a lot of it was like English speaking.
Yeah.
And Hera Feri is very much like a, you know, sort of regional, very like Indian version of Delhi Belly, where the jokes are just as fast, the chemistry is really quick, the misunderstanding happening at the drop of a hat, and if you don't keep up and you don't get the context, you're not getting half the shit that's happening. But do you find, so there is this debate with the dubbing, since we talked about that, there is a debate that when you dub Hindi movies in English for, you know, a non-Hindi speaking audience, there's certain things that change. For example,
yeah,
like, you know, like you were saying, like the references of certain, you know, like the whole Bhai thing and Salman. If you don't watch Bollywood movies, you don't get that reference of what Bhai is and who Salman is. So sometimes in the dubbing, the subtitlers, they will change that reference to something, you know, more understandable. Like, I think the biggest debate recently was that they changed like a pop singer or like a famous Hindi singer's name in the subtitles from that person's name to like Beyonce or something. And people were like, well, this doesn't do justice to that, you know, the original Hindi singer, blah, blah, blah. And I understand that and I admire that. But I also kind of wonder, well, but then how do you convey that? How do you convey that reference or that joke to someone that doesn't know who Lata Mangeshkar, for example, is?
Yeah.
Do you find that?
Is that Fanny Khan they changed her name?
I'm not sure which. I can't remember what movie it was, but I heard a lot of people complaining about that on Twitter.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I get it. I completely get where you're coming from. But how do, like, for example, when I explain, you know, when I used to explain Ram Gopal Varma to people here, or for example, actually, no, I did this with Anurag Kashyap now. The only way for me to explain who Anurag Kashyap is and give a sense of his filmography to someone that doesn't know Bollywood, doesn't know who he is, I kind of just say, oh, he's kind of like the Tarantino of Bollywood.
Yeah.
But if you told me I can't make that reference because that's offensive to, you know, Kashyap or Tarantino, I don't know how else I would explain to someone, you know, what kind of movies Anurag Kashyap makes.
Yeah, it's tricky. I was talking to someone on Twitter about this, but it definitely came up in A Dil Hai Mushkil. Where I think Ranbir Kapoor is kind of mooning around as he does. He's one of cinema's great mooner arounders. Oh, I'm so sad the girl doesn't like me. Yep.
Yeah.
But like someone calls him in the Hindi audio, says, you know, quit being such a devdas over here.
Right.
And then in the subtitle it said, you know, okay, Romeo, knock it off.
Mm.
Which, you know, there's kind of a connection between Devdas and Romeo.
Right.
They're both like, you know, the tragic lovers of
right.
England and India. But it's a completely different sort of context.
Yeah.
And that's got to be really tough. I mean, I think one of the things that's become very enjoyable for us as we watch more and more movies is that we do start to get these jokes. And you kind of have to see around the subtitle in a lot of cases. One of the funnier ones was someone mentioning Sunny Leone, and the subtitle said, oh, she's such a J-Lo type. Like, well, there's a bit of a difference between them as well. Kim Kardashian might be a better choice, but still, like, it's so difficult to compare that way. But that's where, you know,
But
your
it's so funny
podcast,
for
my
it's,
podcast, that's where they come in handy, is that
but
we
it.
are actually comparing the two things and giving people a backbone to kind of build off of as they learn about the films.
And that's kind of why I like remakes done well, right? Because they recontextualize something that was made at a certain time, all of a sudden, another different time in the case of Chinatown, a certain audience in a certain country in a certain style in a certain language. So when you have a remake that does it well, it's really interesting for me to see how they translate all those things to their corner of the world for their language, for their setting, for their political situation.
Yeah.
And it's that to me is the funnest part, but it's really hard though, right? Like, and in the case of Sunny Liu, I think that's stupid because you should like Sunny Liu comes from North America. You
Yeah,
shouldn't
exactly.
need
That's
a
the
North
other
American
tricky
equivalent to
part. He's
describe who Sunny
Canadian.
Liu is.
Yeah, and believe me, I think people here are fairly familiar with her work.
Right.
Maybe not so much the recent movies, but the old stuff. Yeah, I think she was pretty tough
Right.
before.
Right. Well.
I think this is also correct me if I'm wrong on this, but a lot of people who are Hindi speaking and have grown up with Bollywood films have a bit of a chip on their shoulder with Farah Khan movies.
You mean like they don't like them?
Yeah, because
Yeah.
like Aaron and I, we almost loved every single one we've watched, and I think part of it is that she does the references
Yeah.
so well and explains them to you, and she also references things outside of Hindi cinema. But then we hear like, oh, Tees Mar Khan's the worst movie I've ever watched. Like,
Yeah.
oh, I don't know. I mean, I watched Mastizade. I think that's possibly the worst Hindi film I've ever watched. But like Tees Mar Khan, you know, it's jokey and silly, but I think she's using it for a reason.
Yeah.
And I was wondering if you could maybe enlighten me on that. Like, why do people kind of think that she's not as amazing as we do?
Well, I can actually give you both sides of it because I came from exactly that school of thought. So before I heard you guys get into Farah Khan, and again, something else I should really like give you guys credit for and thank you for, I saw Mai Huna, and it was okay. I hated the ending. I hated like a lot of the plot, you know, where it went. The first time around, I watched. What else did she do? I'm right now. My current opinion of Tees Mar Khan is unchanged. I despise that movie. But hold on. Stay with me. I enjoyed Om Shanti Om.
Yeah. Om Shanti Om, I would say, is in the top five Hindi films I've ever seen. So
Yeah. So I enjoyed Om
that's the
Shanti
level we're
Om.
putting her on over here.
Yeah. What else has she done? Oh, Happy New Year. I thought it was garbage the first time I watched it.
Yeah.
So
You could make a good hour and a half movie out of that, but you kind of have to eliminate all of Sona Sood, unfortunately.
yeah, I mean, it wasn't. I mean, I, okay. So, anyways, so what? Where I'm coming from is, so when I first watched all these movies, my reaction was very much like, "Ugh, I hate her. Like, I hate her so much." But then I heard you guys kind of gushing about Farah Khan. It was one of your earlier episodes, and I was kind of like, "Oh, guys, come on!" And then obviously I heard you guys, and you guys made some really good points. I'm like, "Yeah, okay, I guess I get what you're saying. Okay, all right, fine. Let me revisit some of the stuff." And the best part is I revisited all of her movies with my kids, and she is by far their favorite director, even
Oh,
though
nice.
they're not like us right now. Like they don't have a favorite director. They have favorite stars right now, right? They're 10 and 6. So, but they love her as a director. They're like, who did this? Farah Khan? Yeah, let's watch her movie. I rewatched Mai Huna. The kids loved it. I enjoyed it a lot more than I did the first time around. Om Shanti Om, I rewatched again. I remember the first time around, I liked Om Shanti Om so much. I actually bought like the special edition DVD set that had from one of the official, legit, not bootleg. And I rewatched it with my girls, and it is. I agree with you completely. It is in my like most entertaining, best, well done homage, like any sort of movies, the songs, everything. I love everything about Om Shanti Om. And then we even rewatched Happy New Year. And Happy New Year, I think, is my kids' most rewatched movie. They will
Oh,
put that
wow.
on whenever, wherever, and I don't know if it's just the amount of times I don't know if I've just been worn down by it, but I
Got
even
Stockholm
see,
Syndrome now?
yeah. Like
I
even
feel
I'm
like
like,
I've
I
heard
get the
that one.
comedic value, I get the comedic back and forth of this. But yeah, so you guys have been instrumental in changing my opinion of Farrakhan. The reason why I think, well, you mentioned the chip on our shoulder, I think she does what other filmmakers try not to do in their movies. Like, Hindi filmmakers try very much to not make, I mean, this might not be true today, but let's say going back 10 years ago, Hindi filmmakers tried to make their movies not seem like a Hindi movie. They tried really hard. Yeah. They tried to ape Hollywood in so many ways, special effects they brought in, and that was kind of like the selling points of Umbi. Like, we have the action director from The Matrix, and I'm like, okay, that tells me nothing about your movie, though. You know what I mean? Like I don't really care who gets your tea on the set or whatever. You know, like, sure, there's the big cast, editor, director, writer, choreographer, blah 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 blah, but I don't care who's doing your action. Because that's really not what your movie should be about. Like, I remember I saw this feature of Rohit Shetty did when Dilwale was coming out. And it was this really serious, awesome look into the stunts of the movie. And it was great. You know, and he talks about how, you know, the stuntmen were really, you know, amazing. You know, some of them, their livelihoods depend on this work. And they give their all. They risk their lives every single day, blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, this is really cool. Like, you're spotlighting a group of, you know, cast, a group of the crew of Indian movies that we don't get to see. But at the end of the day, I'm like, but that still doesn't make your movies good. Like, this is great.
Did they let the stuntman write the movie, too?
Right, exactly. Because it's like, this is great, and it's awesome, and good for those guys, but your movie shouldn't be based on this.
Yeah.
Right, this enhances your movie. This is not what your movie should be about. And I don't think they really got that until, again, like maybe 10, 12 years ago. And the reason why I think people dislike Farah Khan is she leaned into all of that.
She loves Hindi movies.
Yeah, and that's what I got from you guys, because I'm like, yeah, that's true. She is. She's not doing this. She's not being tacky. She's not. You know, this isn't just her. Oh, I love a rickshaw chase scene with a gun that's way too big to fit in your ankle holster. She's doing it intentionally. It's coming from a place of, yes, this is funny because it's ridiculous, and that's why I'm going to do it because it's hilarious. And once I switched that perspective, I like that too, but I think that's why most people don't like it, because I think they're coming from a place that, oh, she's unknowingly making a terribly tacky movie. They don't get that, no, she's leaning into everything that makes Indian movies, the blockbuster, the masala, the histrionics, the melodrama. Like, she's leaning into all of it hard. She's even referencing other examples of that you're referencing as an example of hating her movie, which is what I thought was really interesting.
You can't look at her choreography and think, oh, this person's kind of sloppily putting a movie together. Everything is clockwork.
Yeah. So I think, I don't know if that answers your question, but I think that's where
it comes from. Because, you could look at something like the Doom series or some other mid-2000s ones where they're trying to do a Hollywood quote-unquote type film. And, you know, there's good sides and bad sides to movies like that, but at the end of the day, you could just watch Fast and the Furious if that's what you want.
Right.
Farah Khan is not making a knockoff of a Hollywood movie. She's making something that's deeply involved in the film culture she grew up in.
Yeah.
And I think that's just what we appreciate, is that, you know, even though we didn't come from that background of watching the movies, we could tell that she really likes them a lot, and it actually makes us want to go seek out more. So if that was her intention, it worked.
Yeah, kudos, right?
We had a speaking engagement with the University of New Brunswick, and I got the class to watch Om Shanti Om ahead of time. So, if you're coming at it with a lifetime of watching Hindi films, we made those kids watch it as their first one. So, I don't know if that's going to put them off or put them onto films, but it's definitely going to have a reaction.
It can't be bad. In any case, like, even if you don't like something, I find it's fun to have experienced it. Because, you know, you move on and you go, oh, wow, that's how not to do that.
We wanted to pick something that would be the most Bollywood.
Yeah, fair enough.
I think Om Shanti Om definitely is.
Well, and even if you listen to the Om Shanti Om episode that I did with K-Phil, a lot of Hamlet and Shakespeare in there too, which is weird, you know, that I never saw it from that perspective until that episode, where I'm like, oh, that's just 100%. Why doesn't Bollywood do this more?
I would also say that there's some Andrew Lloyd Webber in there too.
Yeah, for sure.
His revenge at the end of the movie is the most elaborate and theatrical way to kill a guy. It's insane. It's like a half hour long dance sequence to murder the guy that killed him in a previous life. Like, it's so over the top and melodramatic. I love it.
Yeah, no, for sure. Now, speaking of remaking things for a different audience and a different culture, let's get on with our discussion of China Hainan Manorama 6 Feet Under.
Sure.
But I wanted to ask you before, what is it that, I don't know if most people know, but what is it that you do outside of podcasting?
I run a small publishing company.
Woo!
Yeah, awesome. I make books.
You make books, yeah, perfect.
Yeah.
So obviously, and you mentioned earlier too that you read like a crap ton.
It's my job.
So do you find, so in terms of when it comes to the remake debate, where do you stand on that? Where do you stand on the, you know, are you one of those, you know, blast, no, heresy, can't touch this or whatever, or are you okay with it?
I think I'm like you in that I want the remake to maybe adapt to the modern day or definitely adapt to the place where you set it. Mm-hmm. So Manorama 6 Feet Under totally makes sense that it kind of, drought-infested province of India.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they're also going to have conflicts over water, which makes sense compared to 1930s Los Angeles.
Yeah.
I think this is why people didn't really like, to talk about another one, Bombay Velvet, because mm-hmm. it's trying to look like a 30s gangster movie,
yeah.
but it's set in 60s Bombay,
yeah.
which I loved, but if you're a person who thinks, like, oh, well, that's not really how people dressed back then. You could be completely taken out of it. And that's why I'm glad that Manorama 6 Feet Under, people dress like they did in the mid-2000s.
Yeah.
You know, it seems like the movie's taking place then, even though the mystery is recalling something from, you know, 70 years ago. So I think you do need to do it in a way that makes something new out of it. Vishal Bhardwaj is really good for this. His Shakespeare adaptations are...
Yeah.
Astounding.
Some of the best I think I've seen anywhere.
Yeah. Which is your favorite of the three?
So it's weird because I studied Macbeth.
Mm-hmm.
So I watched Macbeth very like beat by beat. Like I got every reference, I got every adaptation, every tweak, everything he changed. Whereas the other two, Hamlet, sorry, I also studied Hamlet, so I knew some stuff about Hamlet, not a lot. Omgara and Othello, I was completely unaware of. Like, I knew nothing about Othello. I didn't know anything about what happens. I think I liked Omgara the best.
I like Omgara the best, too, yeah.
I think I liked the cast of Omgara more than anything else, because every single person in that cast did something completely different
yeah.
than what we usually see them in. Notably,
yeah.
Saif Ali Khan. I think I was blown away. I think he's my favorite. That is, I think, his favorite performance of mine ever.
Oh, yeah. He's in my top tier of cons because of that,
yeah.
and also Sacred Games and a couple other things.
No,
but
yeah.
he just did an amazing job as Iago.
Yeah,
and I'll also say Ram Lila for a play on Romeo and Juliet.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I like Ram Lila as a movie on its own. I wouldn't really. I can't really even compare because Ram Lila was just such its own thing. And I've forgotten Romeo and Juliet by now. So.
And I'm really looking forward to. Now that I've had to get Amazon Prime, The Hungry, do you know this film?
No.
Nazirudin Shah, it came out last year, and it's an adaptation of Titus Andronicus.
No, I don't know.
Which is my favorite Shakespeare play. And to see that done in Hindi film style, I'm very, very excited because Titus Andronicus was like, the Saw of its day.
Oh, wow.
It's extremely brutal and violent, and to see that translated is going to be very exciting. So we haven't watched it yet because, we have a pretty full dance card with movies we watch.
Yeah.
But, eventually. And Nazirudin Shah's amazing. So he's fantastic.
Yeah, I'm looking it up right now. The cast on this is pretty ridiculous. Oh, I know who this filmmaker is. I've met her.
Oh, nice.
I'm just looking at her picture and I'm pretty sure I've run into her at a fest or something here.
Yeah.
Oh, this is fun. Awesome.
Yeah.
I can't wait. Now I'm interested.
Yeah, it looks great.
Okay, awesome, cool. What would you say is your favorite remake out of any medium, like book to movie, movie to movie, whatever, if you had to pick?
Favorite ever.
Adaptation, remake, reboot, whatever you want to call them.
Well, my favorite movie of all time is The Big Lebowski.
Okay.
And it is definitely playing with things from Raymond Chandler stories.
Right, yeah.
So I think it, again, found a way to turn a 1930s story into a 1990s story and, oh. you know, have a good time with it. So I really like the way it being like a comedic neo-noir. I like the way that it works. I'm also very partial to, this is potentially one of my most controversial opinions, but David Lynch's Dune.
Uh-huh.
Dune is my favorite novel of all time.
Yes.
And David Lynch's Dune is like universally derided as this crazy mess that no one can get. But I think it may be a bad adaptation in that it only works if you've read the book.
Mm-hmm.
Where, you know, not everyone's going to agree with that.
So I don't know if we've, I feel like we've had this conversation before. Maybe when I was on your show. But I was turned on to Dune. So my first experience with Dune was the movie, was the David Lynch version. And I fell head over heels in love. Mm-hmm. The first 10 minutes of that movie, I sat there and I'm like, should I be taking notes? Is this going to be on a
yeah.
test?
Yeah.
Because it was just so much information. Like, it's, I don't think you even call it exposition. It was just raw information.
yeah,
just coming at you,
telling it to you.
right. It wasn't like this happened. No, it's just like this is him. This is what he does. This is his. And I'm just like, I don't why. But the best part about that is when you finally see those people show up on camera, you're like, oh, and you kind of start calling back that, you know, seminar from, you know, the beginning of the movie. So I love Dune entirely. I know you and I have either had conversations on Twitter somewhere, I don't know, but I'm definitely, I really want to read the book. And for anyone that knows me knows I don't like reading. So that's a big thing, that if I want to read Dune. I saw the miniseries as well that's, I think, Sci-Fi put out. Mm-hmm. I did not enjoy that.
No, they could have used at least like $10 more when they were making that.
I did like this Dune. I think it's safe to say that you're probably going to watch the Denis Villeneuve version.
Yes.
That is on the floors right now, I believe.
So
at that point, maybe we'll come back. Maybe we'll do a Lynch and Villeneuve comparison.
Sure. I think what Lynch does, like, he's David Lynch. He has a certain emotional register he works in.
Yeah.
And you have to have that in mind going in, because it's going to be weird. But also, it's the first sci-fi movie, and one of the very few I've seen, that actually makes you think, well, 10,000 years in the future, people would be different.
Yeah.
People would have different opinions about things. They'd talk about different stuff.
Yeah.
Like, it's... You look at something like Mohenjo-Daro, for instance, and everyone talks like it's in the modern day.
Right.
And, you know, I'm going to help all these farmers, even though, like, slavery's still around, and there's, like, minotaurs and all sorts of weird shit. Like... They didn't even try and set it in a period. Whereas Dune definitely goes for a weird period in the future. And, you know, it's kind of off-putting, but also the future would be off-putting.
Yeah.
What would I have in common with a caveman, right?
Yeah, fair enough. And yeah, exactly.
I was weird.
And also, you know, Patrick Stewart. Which, by the way, he could just play the same role in Villeneuve's version, because he looks, if not the same, better now.
Yeah, that would be amazing.
Okay, so let's get to, we're beating around the bush. Matt, one of the things I love about you guys' show is how amazingly you will synopsize a movie. So if you could please,
you're making me do Chinatown?
Yes, if you could please do me the favor, do me the pleasure of giving us everyone a synopsis of Chinatown.
Okay, well, you get to do Manorama then.
Fine.
Okay, so Chinatown, directed by Polanski. I don't know how much you want to get into that, but...
That's a totally different podcast, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it takes place in the 1930s in Los Angeles, and it's a period in which the diversion of water became very important. So Los Angeles is a desert city, mm-hmm. and it has access to, I think it's the Columbia River,
mm-hmm.
but it was unclear as to who owned the water at that point. So that's kind of in the background for the first part of the mystery, though. So Jack Nicholson plays Jake Gittes, not Gitz, Gittes.
Gittes?
Yeah, as John Huston later calls him, Mr. Gitz.
Yeah.
But he's
unintentionally, by the way.
Oh, I think it's intentional. I think he's just fucking with it.
No, because I read this. I read a bit of trivia about the fact that Houston just couldn't get it right.
Oh.
So that's why Polanski wrote in a line during the shoot where Jack Nicholson corrects him. And then Houston just moves on from it. So it does seem like in the movie that he's being a prick, but yeah. It's legitimately because Houston just couldn't say Giddy's properly.
From what I know of John Houston, he was kind of a prick anyway. Giddis is hired by a woman named Evelyn Mulray to track down her husband, who she thinks is having an affair. And he does find the husband and a young girl. He reports it back to the woman and gets paid, and then is surprised by another woman who shows up in his office saying, "I'm Evelyn Mulray. Have we ever met before?" And he's like, "No."
And so, she's essentially suing him now for, slandering her husband and blah, 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 blah.
Yeah. So Giddis is kind of behind the eight ball here and like, wait, so a woman pretending to be Mulray hired me to find her? Well, who is that girl I found?
Yeah.
And he gets caught up in a big mystery about what's going on with the water. Evelyn Mulray's husband ends up dead. He's the head of the Department of Water and Power too. So he ends up dead. So now there's a dead body in the case. And he kind of comes into the orbit of this guy named Noah Cross, who is an extremely wealthy man. Evelyn Mulray's, the real Evelyn Mulray's father, who is planning something having to do with the valley and orange groves and diverting water. And along the way, he just finds it like the rot at the heart of LA in the 30s. How's that?
Yeah, no, that's perfect. I love it. I love it. I'm probably going to use something from there for the title.
Sure.
Yeah, Houston's a prick.
He was a huge drunk, you know.
Yeah.
Kind of difficult to work with, I guess. But he's like a gigantic, amazing director in his own right.
Yeah. No, I've heard. That was actually perfect. I like that. And I mean, Manorama 6 Feet Under doesn't really veer that far away from the general synopsis of what you just gave us. It essentially just changes locations from the 30s LA to 2000-ish Rajasthan, a city called Lakot in Rajasthan. And Abhidev's character plays not a private investigator, but essentially he's suspended from his job. He's a failed novelist who's not that happy with his life, and he kind of gets caught up in this adventure, and he kind of keeps going at it simply because. And this was, I think, the biggest deviation between the two characters, because Nicholson, Giddies kind of goes on this journey to kind of out of sort of pride, right? That okay, someone, you know, used me and kind of tricked me, and I got to get to the bottom of it because I don't like to be used, I don't like to be tricked, and he has this sort of arrogance about him.
Whereas, he gets his nose sliced open, right. And he's mad about that too.
Yeah, so it comes from very much, you know, this need for, you know, who the hell is doing this to me and why?
Yeah.
Whereas I always got the sense from Animal Six Miranda that Abadil's character, Satyavir, I think, goes through what he's going through. Like, when he gets caught up in the adventure, there's a certain point of him that likes it, that it kind of gives him a break from his boring existence, his nagging wife, his responsibilities, all the stuff he's dealing with at work, whereas this kind of gives him something exciting, which, again, he's a novelist, and I think the character in his novel was like a detective.
He wrote a detective novel called Manorama.
Right. So I think he gets to live out his fantasy, essentially, which is why he kind of keeps sticking his nose where it doesn't belong, you know, pun not intended. But yeah, did you like Manorama 6 Feet Under though? Like, I know you said Chinatown is your favorite. What do you think about Manorama 6 Feet Under?
So I thought the change of him becoming a novelist is actually really, really smart.
Mm-hmm.
Because you don't really hire private investigators anymore, right?
Mm-mm.
Nowadays, all they do is, like, you know, they tap your phone, they see who you're talking to on Facebook, like, it's all digital.
Yeah, you get a hacker, you don't get a private PI.
Yeah, there aren't a lot of the cool, like, detective tricks that Giddis does in the 30s.
Yeah.
But having a guy who, like the audience, also thinks it would be cool to be a detective is super smart.
Yeah.
I watched Manorama first. I watched it last week, and I watched Chinatown this week. Mm-hmm. And I think while I was watching Manorama, I was a little underwhelmed. But then I watched Chinatown, and I realized, oh, they doubled some of these scenes so accurately that I didn't realize. Like, it's an adaptation that I guess if you haven't watched Chinatown recently, you're not going to realize how good of a job they did.
Yeah. For sure.
And it's also an adaptation that, quite ballsily, I thought, actually puts a scene from Chinatown in it. Like, he watches the scene where Polanski's character cuts Jack Nicholson's nose in the movie.
Yeah, yeah. It's playing, I think, on, like, a TV in the background or something.
Yeah,
yeah.
Which is fascinating. Yeah. If you're one of those conspiratorial types who wonders, like, okay, well, if he knows he's in a movie, or, like, if he's seen Chinatown before, shouldn't he realize that he's kind of in a Chinatown situation now? You could go down the rabbit hole on that. But
no, that's true.
Yeah, the more I think about Manorama, the more successful I think it is. Unfortunately, I think the thing that kind of lets it down the most is giving him a wife.
Yeah, I mean, I'm in the exact same boat as you. I was very underwhelmed by Manorama. I'm like, yeah, I get it. I get what they've done, but kind of how it goes about doing it seemed very much like, you know, like, ugh, like, not as well done. But you're absolutely right. Yeah, it is. There's so many things that they translate from Chinatown into Manorama that it's kind of genius in so many ways. Mm-hmm. But yeah, this character is bogged down, excuse me, by a lot of baggage, though, that Giddy's mm-hmm. never had. He had the sort of, which I think is kind of like an unnecessary sort of subplot or arc to put in there, because on top of all the crap he's dealing with, he has to deal with his brother-in-law, he has to deal with this wife in the background, all of which would work if those things didn't exist, you know. Because the stressfulness of what he's going through is tense enough without you giving him a wife and a kid, and also it having a wife and a kid also takes away that sense of what's gonna happen to this guy. Because you know it's an Indian movie. They're not going to kill the hero who happens to be a dad. So that kind of was a little underwhelming for me overall. How did you feel about the overall majority of the plot in terms of what the actual conspiracy that he was caught up in? In Chinatown, it was sort of a land deal situation. Also, you mix in a bit of sort of family drama, whereas this was solely the family drama. The larger plot kind of took a backseat to the heir and the minister and that kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah, like, Ideal's character does go out to kind of a desert part of the landscape where there's some poor people who either their land is going to be sold out from them right away to the rich guy, or it has already. And you do get a little bit of a sense of that, but you don't get all the, you know, going out to the reservoir. The stakes are a little bit more unclear. You're kind of on Abigail's side because we think that this rich guy's up to something.
Yeah.
And the first Manorama, she gets murdered. Or not the first Manorama, just the woman who hires him originally gets murdered.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But it's a little bit not as good. But then the scene where Abigail goes to the doctor's house.
Yes.
After they've been murdered and looks around. I mean, that's almost shot for shot what they did with Giddy's going to the original Evan Mulray's house.
Yeah.
It's, you know, they took such time and care on scenes like that, but then kind of had to shoehorn some extra stuff in. It's, you know, I don't like telling a movie to take out female characters.
Yeah.
Like, I think there should be more female characters in films, more trans characters, more everybody.
Yeah.
Less just regular guys. You don't need... Yeah, especially white guys, but not in a Hindi film. You just probably don't need as many just guys.
Yeah.
But like, it's just too bad that he's saddled with these characters that don't really add much to the plot, and also just kind of complicated in a way. Like, oh, we have to care that his wife left town. Yeah. All right, fine.
Sure.
Sure.
And also, so, I found the wife thing also kind of didn't really like whatever sort of good light you put on this character that, oh, he's just, you know, he's unhappy with his life, so he's going on this adventure. Oh, poor guy. But then he's so indifferent when it comes to his wife that you kind of see him in sort of a negative light.
Yeah.
That, oh, he's kind of a dick. Which, I don't know if that was intentional. I don't know what the point of that was. Also because there's this romantic tension with this girl he finds during his investigation that's helping him. So now you're kind of like, okay, but he's married. Like, so, again, like, you're supposed to relate, you're supposed to root for this guy, but at the same time, you know, you're kind of also seeing him as, like, he doesn't seem like the nicest guy.
I think he's supposed to be depressed,
Yeah.
But it doesn't come through exactly. You get that he's bored with his job and like he screwed something up and he's on leave.
Yeah.
And this mystery is really the only thing keeping his interest. But it's difficult to get into a character like that's head.
Yeah.
Something I also noticed about both of these movies, definitely Chinatown and I think Manorama, is that each scene is shot from the perspective of Nicholson or Deal.
Yeah.
Like, there aren't any scenes where they're not around.
No.
So the audience is also invited to become detectives, too, because we don't know anything they don't know.
Yeah.
We see all the clues. We could put things together in our head, but they're with us the entire time. We don't see, like, what Noah Cross is getting up to by himself, what kind of evil plans he's doing. Like, we don't know. We only know what we're told. And I think to make a detective movie, control over plot elements is very, very important. And I will give Manorama credit. They did a really good job at that as well.
And that was a very Polanski thing, too, because I think the original screenplay for Chinatown had Jake Gitte's narration. That was running through. And narration always implies that, you know, it's in the, like, you're retelling a story. So the character's fine, the character's safe, so, you know, we know how it ends, kind of a situation. So I think Polanski's decision was to take that out of Chinatown and have everything happen from Gitte's perspective. If he didn't know something, we didn't know something. And I like that Manorama did keep that.
Same thing with Blade Runner. They originally had the narration.
Yeah.
Harrison Ford seemed really bored while he was doing it too. You know, sometimes it's good to have that person guiding you through, but also if you want to have the stakes get raised, you can't have them telling the narration. Yeah. Or you have to do it in a way like, oh, he was a ghost, or it was a tape that or something, like a Double Indemnity, for instance. I'm going to tie back to Chinatown, tie back to Manorama, Six
Perfect.
Feet Under.
Thank you.
So through a means of a simile, so you know why there's a Watson with Sherlock Holmes and Watson? Watson's job is to get explained to.
Right.
We never hear what Sherlock is thinking in his head because he's like six steps ahead.
Right.
So with a detective movie and with Sartaj, with Gittes, with Abigail's character, who I forget, but I don't remember his name, but we can't have access to their thought processes because they're learning, that they're putting things together in their head. And part of the fun of the detective movie is doing it yourself.
Yeah.
And if you're, it's kind of cheating if, you know, Sherlock tells you, oh, well, I saw there was a piece of mud on his shoe, which means he works over here. Like, it's not as fun to try and solve the mystery yourself that way. So that's why I think all these guys were not given access to their thoughts.
Fair enough. That makes sense.
I don't think you'd want to know what happened.
No, I really don't. Yeah, I that's fair. That's true. I guess I really wouldn't want to know. Speaking of Abigail, now you've seen him in a few movies so far, right? You've seen him in Dave D.
Yeah.
You've seen him in Zindagi Naam Lagi Dobara. Did you guys have a chance to catch Aisha yet?
No, we finally got legal access to it, and we're probably going to do an episode on Jane Austen adaptations.
Yes, perfect.
So we're going to do that at some point.
Awesome.
I like him. Is Dev D like his big role, you'd say?
I think that was like, I don't know about his breakout, but I think that was kind of like what he was most appreciated for.
Yeah. He's definitely in the role of like a long, lean hero type guy, like an Amitabh Bachchan. Like, he's got that kind of look that works really well.
Yeah.
But he is a very interior actor. In Dev D, like, he's high and drunk all the time, so it kind of makes sense. And this one, he's a detective, so you don't want to know. But it's kind of tough to get a read on him, I think.
Yeah, actually, weirdly enough, I'm just looking at his filmography. Manorama came before Dev D.
Oh.
So he did that at least 2 years before Dev D. Or at least it was released 2 years before Dev D. So, yeah, that's interesting. But, I mean, I really like him as an actor. Simply because of the choices he makes.
Yeah.
And he is technically a Deol, so he is part of like the Bollywood sort of star kid family. He does have family in the industry. But he's never leveraged that, it doesn't seem like, because his choice of movies and roles are so far off left field than what anyone else is doing. Like any one of these, you know, star kids or whoever, whatever you want to call them. He also seems like one of those guys that's not like, he's not seduced by one particular thing. He just likes doing whatever he finds challenging.
Yeah.
And yeah, I really like him as, and that's the only reason I knew about Manorama beforehand, just because I like him and I was following him and he did this movie and I'm like, oh, that's interesting. Never saw it.
Yeah. He definitely, yeah, if you didn't know that he was a star kid, you would just think, oh, he's an actor who likes challenging, interesting roles. I mean, Dave D is a difficult role to play, I would say. And I think this one is too.
Yeah, no, for sure. Yeah, it's, I mean, Dave D, how do you do that? And you know, how do you just be completely high in stone all the time and have people give a
and
shit
also,
about you?
And also be the third in a series of adaptations of, like, one of the most beloved novels
that's
in
true.
Media, right? Like, that, you got to do it differently each time. I mean, he's not going to do the Shark version.
Yeah,
no one
can
do that again.
No.
He's not going to do the 50s version. You have to find a new way to do it, and you have to find a new way to emote those same old feelings again. And I think, yeah, him kind of dulling himself down and being very interior person, it's definitely the opposite of Shark, and it's definitely more in keeping with what a person like that would be like now, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no,
you don't know, there aren't a lot of super dramatic people. A lot more people are insular and looking at their phones and not going out anymore. People are kind of hiding away like that, and I think Dave D did a good job on that.
I'm very curious for you to see him in Aisha, because that's also one of his sort of younger roles, which I really like. So, oh,
cool.
No comment until you guys watch. But
okay, maybe we should have you on for that one.
No, I think because we did an episode on Aisha, so I don't think I would have anything to add to that. I don't want it to be like a repeat, so it's fine. You guys should, because I know you guys have been dying to watch Aisha for like years now. It's been.
Well, I'm a huge Jane Austen fan, and one of Aaron's favorite movies ever is Clueless. So
yes, yeah.
It's definitely in our wheelhouse. We just got to figure out something to do it
with. That's another movie that I found new life with my kids, because again, I have a 10-year-old girl, and she loves Clueless.
Yes.
And she's dying to watch Aisha too. So. Yeah, and again, if you hear the show that I did on the on Emma and Aisha, the comparison, I am not a Jane Austen person. I don't read, so I don't think I should be on that episode of yours. I think you can find someone a lot more educated on that topic, on Jane Austen, on, who likes to read in general, who could probably contribute a lot more than anything I'd have to say.
All right. We'll figure something else out, though.
Yeah, for sure. No, I'm always down. I got to ask you, though. I was a little disappointed by one thing in Manorama.
Sure.
Which, I don't know how you do a Chinatown remake without this. That at the end of the movie...
She's my daughter, my sister.
No, not even that. Just at the end of the movie, why did no one ever say, forget it, Satyavir, it's Lakote?
Yeah.
How do you not have that line in there?
Well, it also has a happy ending.
Yes, it has a very uplifting sort of eventual justice situation that, oh, he'll get his, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, what did you like about that?
The Chinatown ending is one of the great gut punches of all time.
Yeah.
Like, you think, oh, maybe they're going to get away. I don't know what's going to happen. Well, forget about it, Jake. It's Chinatown. Like, oh, well, you could very easily just have the corrupt leadership guy in Manorama win.
Yeah.
You could. And it's not like there aren't Hindi films that don't have depressing endings.
Right.
It happens all the time. I don't know why they changed that. It seems like a big misstep. I guess if they really wanted to plant their flag and say, look, we're doing our Chinatown. It's not like that one. We're going to change the ending.
Yeah. They did change one of the more controversial elements from Chinatown. One of the reveals was that there was sort of an incestuous relationship between the Noah Cross character and the Evelyn Mulray character, which was kind of like a subplot to the whole land scam thing. But I didn't expect them to keep that angle in Manorama, because I'm like, oh, this is a little, you know, might not be that easy to swallow for like a Hindi movie audience. But they did have like child abuse and like pedophilia in there. So I'm like, oh, okay. So you stepped away from one super controversial thing to something totally different. So, okay, fine.
Yeah, the adopting the girls, that's a way to do it.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think it works considering the world it's set up. Because also, I think the thing about the 30s is it would be a lot easier to falsify records like that. Like,
yeah,
the fact that Evelyn Mulray has a sister and a daughter. If you're rich enough, I think you could hide it pretty easily, especially if you're as powerful as, you know, a cross.
True.
But in modern day, you know, it's a bit trickier. A lot more government bureaucracy who would potentially be, you know what you're up to.
Well, we're talking about India, right? And the bad guy's a politician, so.
Yeah, I mean, he could also cover it up, but I don't know. The movie was long enough as it is. I don't know.
Oh, the pacing of Manorama was really sort of ugh. But speaking of, I can't believe we talked about Nawazuddin Siddiqui and didn't talk about his little appearance in this.
He's dressed like a member of NSYNC, I think. I did like him in this, and I think he would basically be the Roman Polanski equivalent.
Yeah.
He's good.
He's good. Yeah, he's. I thought it really worked. I'm trying to see when in his filmography this was.
Before or after Munabai? Because he was in that, and very memorable in Munabai.
He was in. Oh, weird enough. Apparently, he was also in another Abadale movie right before this one. Ek Chaalees Ki Laas Local.
Munabai was the year.
Munabai was 2003. Manorama was 2007. Black Friday was 2004. Black Friday I saw him in.
He's great in Black Friday.
Yeah, he's amazing in Black Friday. He's
really
also
good in New York too.
So he had, I don't know if you know this, but he's become one of those guys that, like, he's had so many early credits that, and he's so big now that you kind of go back and go, oh. He was in a scene in an Amir Khan movie. And that looks like that was his first credited role.
Is that Sarfarosh?
Sarfarosh, yeah. And I think he's in like one shot.
Says role is terrorist.
Yeah. So I mean, I had no idea he was in this movie. So
you
when
could
I
do
saw
a poem
him,
with his early roles here. It'd be like terrorist, waiter, messenger, Noah, first bandit, cameo, pickpocket.
Oh my god. He was
New York maybe where he really breaks out, because he's maybe like the fourth most important character in that
movie. I don't even remember him in New York, and he was in Dave D too. I'm looking at his filmography right now. He's in a lot of movies that I didn't even notice him in. I noticed him only in Gangs of Wasseypur. It's from then on that I started paying attention to him.
In New York he has a really emotional scene, like he's this guy who got put in Guantanamo after 9/11.
And I remember that scene.
Yeah, he's like talking about how him and I think John Abraham was there too. They're just talking about what happened to them there. It was really well done. And I think part about us coming into this so late in the game is like we've loved him from day one, and then just seeing him in all these movies, like, oh man, Nawazuddin Siddiqui in again, extra star to the whole movie.
All right, so Matt, I think we're gonna wrap it up.
Sure.
I wanted to know from you before we finish up here. This is something, you know, we're talking about remakes, so I enjoy doing this. We talked about, you know, the many ways that Manorama didn't work versus, you know, Chinatown. I think it's safe to say Chinatown is pretty perfect as is. There was multiple drafts of the screenplay which did sort of sometimes lean towards a more happier ending, but I think Polanski changed it to what we got. And the screenwriter at the end of the day was actually pretty satisfied with that. Whereas, you know, obviously Manorama does a lot of things that changes it. So I wanted to ask you, if you were to cast... Now, first of all, I wanted to ask you, Chinatown obviously is a very sort of noir or neo-noir. It's homaging to the 30s, made in the 70s. Where do you think Manorama falls in sort of genre? Because if you look it up, they describe it as a thriller.
I would say it's a neo-noir.
Yeah.
It definitely, especially in the early parts, it does do a lot of the chiaroscuro lighting. It's mostly in Abigail's house, but he's got like the Venetian blinds, and they'll use like a TV to light a scene.
Yeah,
I think it fits within there.
Okay.
There's a subset of neo noir called film soleil, which you know, film sun, sort of. Not quite exact opposite of noir films, but noir films where there's also like a desert, basically. I think it fits there.
Oh,
man, I'm looking at the DVD cover for Manorama, and it looks terrible.
Their posters.
It looks like a comedy.
Yeah. Okay, it's perfect. So now, if you were to do, let's say you were to do what Bollywood usually does, which is take an amazing subject, amazing movie, and just completely commercialize, mainstream, and, you know, Bollywoodize it. Songs, everything, just mainstream stars, you know, glossy, everything. You're basically stripping away from the original. but if you were to do a really good commercial Chinatown remake, what would be your fan casting for that movie?
Okay, so first off, we set it in Bangalore.
Okay.
They're having difficulty with water there too, right?
Awesome, okay.
Yeah, so I think, and also that ties into my choice of director, Vikramaditya Mottrane.
Okay, perfect.
Because I haven't seen Bhavesh Joshi's superhero yet, because it didn't actually come out in Canada.
I think it's coming out on streaming sometime
soon. Yeah, it'll be out soon, so I'm really excited to watch this, because I've loved all of his other movies. But as I understand it, a big part of that movie is about the municipal government screwing around with water.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, Mottrane is already interested in, you know, the topic. And while he hasn't done a straight noir film or even a detective film, I think that his grasp of genre is so good. Because, like, Udon, wonderful coming-of-age movie with Rohit Roy being, like, a really, like, terrifying father figure.
Yeah.
Luterra, beautiful romance set in the period, too, the 50s.
Mm-hmm.
So he's good at period, he's good at romance. And Trapped, fantastic movie. He's good at...
sort of insular, sort of, like, a bottle episode type of a story.
Yeah, story set on one person, like Chinatown.
Yeah,
and also really getting you to empathize with somebody.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah.
So he's my choice.
All right, perfect.
So for Jake Gittes, you ready?
Yeah.
Irfan Khan.
Wow, okay. So you know what I think we should do? I think let's just do this together. Because
you do yours.
I feel we're going to overlap. So my director, my tone for the movie itself, I was going to go very commercial. And it's funny that you brought up Bombay Velvet earlier. Because I see Chinatown done right to be a more commercially viable, successful version, remake, like Bombay Velvet. But Bombay Velvet, I thought, like you said, the problem was that it got way too bogged down with what it was trying to be like instead of being like itself. Whereas if you take how Manorama was translated, how the setting and the issues and the actual characters and the specifics of the story translated from 30s LA to, you know, 2000s Rajasthan, if you do that, I think you get, and then you add in the commercial elements of, you know the costumes and the locales and the you know, the sort of dramatic one-liners, which again Bombay Velvet had, but I feel like the story got lost in all of that. But you could easily do that, and again, as for a director based on Bombay Velvet and based on Rangoon, I would say Kashyap or Bharadwaj. For that. And the reason why I started and interrupted you is because my Giddies is also Irfan Khan.
Oh, nice.
So, because I think he's one of those guys who could really kind of get away with that sort of that dashing sort of private eye in the awesome suits and the hat and the expensive, you know, smoking cigars or whatever. But at the same time, also give off that sort of pride and arrogance of, you know, don't screw with me, you know, like, what the hell, and that kind of a vibe.
He feels like he's been around the block, right?
Right, exactly. He gives off that sort of season, like he's, you know, he could be like a very sort of charming guy, but also a guy who's very good at what he does and very experienced in what he does.
My secondary director who I just thought of too, Deepakar Banerjee.
Ooh, yeah.
Because Detective Byomkesh Bakshi.
Oh, shit, yeah.
That did such a good
right.
job with the period. If you wanted to do a period piece, I would get Banerjee. If you wanted
this
to set it modern day, I'd do Mottrane. Just... You know, the only thing I didn't like about Byomkesh Bakshi was the new metal music, but everything else was, like, perfect.
But see, I like that about the movie. I like that it was, like, this period movie, but it had so much, like, sheen, and, like the cinematography was so beautiful.
It looked amazing.
Yeah, so I think you're right. I think he would be more perfect than any one of these other guys, because I'm just trying to, like, I'm trying to reconcile the glossiness of Bombay Velvet with the grittiness of Manorama and finding an in-between, but... Byomkesh Bakshi was the in-between. It's like this perfect blend of both, right?
Yeah, that was a great movie.
All right, okay, I'm with you on that. Who do we have?
So my Evelyn, someone who I know you like and has a fun name to say. Can you guess?
I could guess. Tapsee Pannu?
Tapsee Pannu.
Yeah! Awesome.
Fun to say? She's a great actress.
Fun to say, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, great actress. And I think in Pink especially, you definitely get like the sense that she could go to the depth that Dunaway has to.
Yeah, I can see that. Yeah, I can. Yeah, she's like that quiet, sort of introspective, you know, tortured soul, but just emoting through the eyes sort of a character. I can see that. I can see that.
I think she could potentially freak out if she had to.
Oh, yeah, yeah. What was the movie? She has a new movie that just came out, Mulk. And in the trailer, yeah, she's going apeshit in that. So definitely she can do like the sort of melodrama histrionics. I went a different way.
Okay.
Because I'm trying to like match the sort of on-screen sort of age kind of looks.
Okay.
So I went for Mr. Mulray, I went with Dabu.
Hmm.
Okay. Simply because I feel like with Faye Dunaway, I always got this vibe of like, you know, a very, not older, but mature woman. Sexy, also very classy, you know. And I can see, and Dabu, it looks, she's ageless. So I could definitely see her give off those vibes. And I think also, again, it's funny we touched upon all these characteristics before in the beginning of the show. But this is also the Maqbool pair. Right, you got Irfan Khan and you've got Dabu, right? And that's kind of, and they have amazing chemistry together. So I would love to see them in a dynamic.
They're kind of a Jodi, right?
Right, exactly. Right, I want, like, it's nice to see them in a. It would be nice to see them in a role in a movie where they start off very much at odds with one another. She's got a secret. He's trying to find out her secrets, and then how they kind of get on the same page by like the climax.
Yeah, if you wanted a more commercial person who I think could also hit those heights too. More commercial, more commercial these days, I'd say. Anushka Sharma.
Yes.
You want to talk about someone who's good at going apeshit?
Yeah.
Anushka Sharma.
Awesome, perfect. All right, who do you got next?
Okay, so for Noah Cross, I also have two. One of them, I'll admit, is kind of a sentimental favorite, but the other one, I think he could do it no problem.
Okay.
So, my sentimental favorite is one of my favorite Hindi actors is Boman Irani.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I can see that.
He may not have like the stature of a John Huston, but he has played villains before.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I can see. Oh, that was good. This was the one I was having the most trouble with. But you yeah, I like Boman Irani.
You just need him to get him to clamp down on like the goofy shit that he does.
So my biggest problem with casting a Huston for this role was I kept getting bogged down by seeing him in that all white suit with the hat.
Oh yeah.
And I'm like, I can't picture anyone from Bollywood in that getup. But now that you said Boman Irani, I'm like, I see it. That works.
He's definitely willing to wear like weird costumes.
Yeah.
And I'll say like being Cyrus, he's a little bit over the top, but he is pretty menacing.
Yeah.
And Don too. And Don Juan.
He's pretty
very
good.
Very over the top, but also quite menacing.
Yeah, for sure.
My other pick for this is Pankaj Tripathi.
Yes. Oh,
dude
shit,
is having a moment. He's in like 6 movies and he's always good.
He's in every movie. Like, yeah. I don't think there's a movie that I'll put on now or that I'll watch the trailer for now and he shows up at the end. I'm like, oh, okay. Like, I mean, dude was in Sacred Games at the end. He just kind of shows up and I'm like, huh.
Yeah, he's got to be a bigger part of the second season, right?
Yeah. Oh, I feel like he is the backdoor main antagonist of the series.
Yeah.
But yeah, yeah, no. Oh shit, yeah. That, you know what?
And I was thinking mostly of Newton. He's good in that as the army officer.
Well, and that's the amazing part about this character too. In the same year that he plays like a father figure to Rajkumar Rao, he also does a movie where they're like contemporaries.
And he's also Barely Keep Arfie. He's a great father figure in that, too.
Well, but that's what I mean. In that movie...
Oh, yeah, you meant like
yeah,
that
yeah.
way.
Okay, yeah, yeah, yeah. So, because Rajkumar Rao is, like, you know, wooing his daughter, right?
Yeah.
So he's, like, the father figure. But then in the same year in Newton, they're playing, like, contemporary. Like, you know, they're side by side together. So
they're button heads, yeah.
Yeah, so it was just really amazing. That. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, those are my two. Who do you
No, yours is... I concede mine to yours because I went with an easy pick. Staying in the line of like the Bharadwaj favorites, I went with Nasruddin Shah
as a
Noah Cross. I mean, he wouldn't do what Huston did. He would kind of make it his own. But he when he's a villain, because he's such a good actor and he's such a sweet guy, like you know, you see a lot of his more major leading roles be him playing super nice guys, whereas his villain roles are always kind of like cameos or guest appearances. I think if we had him in this, I think he would be super menacing and super evil.
Yeah, he has to not do his Krish guy.
Yes, no, not that.
Not but that. Yeah, he could do it. And that's one of the reasons I want to see The Hungry is just he's always really good. And he was really good in Being Cyrus too, even though he was kind of a stoner in that.
Well, I mean, I went more with like I'm thinking more about like the end of Zindagi Milegi Na Dobara, where he's this apathetic guy. But if you just maybe crank that up from a bit more left from apathetic to just, you know, just totally just vile. I think because his delivery in those movies, I'm like, you're a dick. But he was just doing it so casually. Now you imagine him just go 2 degrees the other way and, you know, further into that kind of vibe. And he would be a really good sort of evil villain.
Yeah, that was kind of one of the downsides of Manoramas. The guy they had playing that was whatever. He wasn't wasn't really a guy.
Yeah, he felt very much like the stooge than the main bad guy.
And if you really wanted to go commercial, you got to go Big B.
I thought about that,
he's
too.
He's a John Huston. He's a John Huston
for sure.
Like, level, right?
For sure, yeah. I don't...
He might...
Yeah, I don't know how much he would be up for playing like a pedophile or like an incestuous sort of in a relationship. But
he plays villains all the time.
He does. That's true. Yeah. That's fair. All right, awesome. This was long overdue, but so much fun. Matt, I want to thank you for making the time, giving me a second chance, as it were, to come back on the show. For the first time. No worries. It was always a pleasure. Like I said, like you guys, I love your podcast. You know, as much as from a standpoint of I also make a podcast, but more so from the version of like a fan. Like I listen to your stuff as a fan, and as I'm listening to them, I transform into someone who also makes podcasts, going, why is my shit not as good? You know, and then I'm like kind of getting inspiration and everything else. So thank you for all of that. Why don't you let everyone know where they can get a hold of you and listen to your amazing podcast after this one, of course.
I will say your shit is equally as good. Love listening to your show. Yours is the only Bollywood show that does news that I like at all. Because you and Sam or Kathy, you just have a really good way of distilling through the bullshit, basically. And also the way that you are forced to listen to Bollywood gossip is always hilarious every time.
I feel like people are enjoying my displeasure so much that it's going to end up becoming like a regular thing, which I really don't want it to. But at the same time, people seem to be enjoying it so much that I'm kind of torn. I'm like, I don't want to do gossip, but, you know, when you do something for other people, it's kind of like, well, you got to give them what they want. But
it's super funny. And also, I get the sense that you are interested, but you don't want to say.
It's hard not to be sometimes, right? Like, you can't. Like, I mean, and I know you do this too, when you're kind of introduced with a, well, did you know they were dating? You know, you kind of get sucked up in it too. I hear it on the show sometimes too. But it's just, like, I care, but for maybe like 2 minutes.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
I don't want to go into
your life over.
Right. I don't want to go into like a 90-minute dissection of, well, that jeans look like the same one she was wearing 2 days after she came. And I'm like, why? So,
I'm laughing now. It's funny.
This is not a bit, Matt. All right, perfect. Sorry, I interrupted you.
No, I interrupted you. But we really like your show, and I love listening to it every week. So don't listen to him. This show is equally as good as my show. But if you want to check out Bollywood is for Lovers, look us up on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts, Audio Boom, where we're both headquartered now. There's a Twitter account at Bollywood Pod, or if you want kind of expanded show notes, you can check out bollywoodisforlovers.tumblr.com. We put some gags in there, so check them out.
Awesome, man. Thank you so much. Thank you so much for coming, and thank you for always the nice plugs on your show. I'm pretty sure like a good 75% of my audience comes from your referrals. So, you know, your check is in the mail, as I always say.
Perfect. We got to share the love.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, and there's space for everyone, right? It's never sort
I
of
think
a...
So.
It's not a competition. Like, you know, you got something else, I've got something else. I find it really funny when our shit overlaps sometimes, which I think is kind of because it's not planned. But yeah, but no, thank you so much for coming. Give my best to Aaron.
I will.
And we'll definitely plan something for next time, and it won't be as long as this one was. For everyone else listening, thank you so much for listening. If you want more episodes of this podcast, definitely subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or anywhere else that you like to listen to podcasts. If you like what you heard today, please leave us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts. It's kind of the best sort of validation that I can get. Follow the podcast on Twitter at splitscreen_pod. Follow me personally on Twitter at the Shah Shahid. It's also the best place to get in touch with me with any sort of feedback, negative, positive. I find negative feedback always makes me do better, whereas positive feedback just makes me, you know, feel better. And if you want to come on, like Matt, if you want to suggest a film remake or anything else, I know a lot of people have reached out to me on Twitter and Facebook with sort of remake ideas, so I appreciate that. Keep them coming. Definitely get in touch with me on social media anywhere, or just email me directly. My email address is shah@blankpagebeatdown.com. And for everyone else, thank you so much for listening. Matt, once again, thank you for being on the show. And for the Space Pain Podcast, this is Shah Shahid.
Bye.